Hello and welcome to the international edition of my podcast, Rad Ab. I'm your host, Linda Rad, and I interview entrepreneurs who I admire and look up to. I want to know more about their business and work ethics, and not only the entrepreneurial endeavors, but also what drives them, what inspires them, and how do they become so outstanding at what they're doing. I believe you need so much more than just talent and skills to be successful in business. So let's find out what secrets our entrepreneurs will reveal to us. Okay, cool. So welcome, Jody Nelson-Tabor and Adrian Weber. Thank you very much for being here in our podcast bus.
Love
and
it.
Welcome to Mitweida at the Medienforum, a conference organized by students solely. And you're going to have a panel very soon. We're going to be talking about virtual production and a few use cases. You're going to highlight, I guess, and the state of the industry you're going to talk about, and educational opportunities for our students. My first question goes to you, Jody. As head of Final Pixel Academy and as a filmmaker for over 20 years, I think, what got you initially interested in virtual production, and what made you shift basically towards virtual production in general?
Well, I've had quite a diverse sort of portfolio career prior to coming into to Final Pixel, and as you said, a filmmaker. I've been an educator. I've lived in LA shooting my own projects. So I came from an acting background, so my master's is in performance. And I've also loved new emerging technology. So I came over to the UK and did a PhD in sort of new emerging forms of production methodologies. This is before virtual production was even on my tongue. And so I guess the most recent, I was a senior lecturer at the University of Greenwich, and I was teaching film. My main specialisms are producer and writer. But I love technology advances that sort of democratize the filmmaking experience. And so with all of these new social media and collaborative forms of filmmaking, it was just sort of merging me towards this tunnel. And about 3 years ago, when Mandalorian had come out, like most people, what is this virtual production? I was so fascinated by what it was, not, you know, having a full comprehension of what it could actually do. And there was a funding body called Story Futures in the UK that had put out some research funding to look at different research threads through virtual production and sort of these new emerging technologies. So I was quite interested in doing a virtual production for myself, but also to understand the pragmatic workflows, what was involved, how does it work, through the lens of how are we going to teach this? Because if this is the direction of travel, There was no papers, there was no instructional, you know, there was nothing. It was a very closed shop. So we did a short virtual production. It was on a green screen methodology. We didn't have an LED panel, panels. So, and we worked with Moses, who was right down the street, you know, conveniently enough, who came and did the camera tracking and really helped us with all of the technological and pragmatic aspects of it. None of the staff had ever done virtual production. So and it was right during COVID. So we were all thrown in the deep end of learning how to do virtual production during COVID, not coming to the set. So we had all these creative reviews on Zoom, which were like 4 hours of just like, with our Unreal technician sort of operating the stage. So it was through that process that then the outputs of the research were then to disseminate how are you going to teach this and build curriculum. And so it was at that point that Michael McKenna, who is the CEO of Final Pixel, came across one of my posts on LinkedIn. And Final Pixel is an end-to-end virtual production company, started right before the pandemic. And really, he had the vision. He knew that this was going to be the direction of travel, but found out very quickly that if we don't skill up our talent, there is no, industry. So he reached out to me and said, we'll come and help you build this curriculum. So we embedded an 8-week course into the third year's film students, and really kind of just started learning and making up things as we went, and how are we going to shape the curriculum? And I was smitten. I was like, this is it. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. And Michael just sort of whispered in my ear one day. He's like, you know, I need to hire somebody to build this academy that I want to put together. Do you know anybody? I was like, yes. Hello. And it has been an absolutely amazing journey in the last, you know, 2 years. So I started consulting with them for a bit and then came on full time. Mm-hmm. And it has been from zero to hero, literally in the last like year and a half, more people coming on board and really starting to see the benefits and of virtual production. Mm-hmm. So that's in the short of it, I guess, how I got here today. Yeah.
Thank you. And you've been working with Adrian together on a few projects. So Adrian, as a freelance producer, supervisor, we met actually at the Halo stage in Potsdam a few years ago. And since then, you've been setting up virtual production setups all over the world.
Yeah.
You went to, I think, Mexico recently and have been working in London also. My question is, what have been the biggest challenges for production companies pursuing virtual production? Are they keen on experimenting?
Well, they're keen on using the technology. Keen on experimenting is maybe a different story because, they very much like the idea of it. I mean, the promise is incredible. You kind of can do anything anywhere, but you really can't do anything everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very specific set of like productions you can actually do in it and where it works very well. So the problem is basically somebody comes in either super motivated and wants to try everything and then is kind of frustrated that it's not really going that easily and that smoothly as you imagined. Mm-hmm. And the other way around, there's coming in a lot of traditional filmmakers who have been like doing movies for since forever. And then us kind of the new kids on the block telling them, well, you have to do it like this, otherwise it will don't look good. And he's like, yeah, no, you know, I've been doing this since 25 years. So how about, I'm doing this my way, basically. So that's kind of the two main challenges, I guess. So finding a common baseline is the most difficult thing in the beginning, to kind of tone down the expectations or kind of get them thinking about where it could actually work and where it benefits the entire, you know, industry or this project in particular. Because it's also when you hear people saying, yeah, well, I've seen them doing this on that shoot. So like, yeah, that makes sense for this setup because they've also shot, for example, 5 weeks longer than you guys. So the price and like the entire budget made sense. But if you set up this entire setup for 2 days, it's going to, you know, skyrocket your budget.
Yeah.
So it's just like finding the ways and kind of tuning in everybody on the same baseline.
So it's more, your arguments are, it's more time efficient, therefore more cost efficient.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you do it right and you can have more creativity, like creative freedom, if you do it right, you have a more comfortable work environment for the crew. They don't have to go out night shoots. They don't have to wait for like 15 hours in the cold by minus whatever degrees in the witness or so on.
Yeah.
So it kind of is, there's a huge amount of potential. You can do shots that weren't possible. There's kind of the restricted location part of things. So it was so funny. I heard Luisa talk about the House of the Dragon thing where she was working on, and they literally couldn't get onto the like super iconic bridge because it has become a nature reserve. It was kind of super overrun by tourists, so there's no chance of, you know, blocking it down to shoot. Yeah. So all of a sudden that's possible again, and with the people actually seeing what they're doing, it's not like green hell as we call it sometimes. Yeah. It's just more visual in that sense. So there's a ton of advantages, but there's also some limitations if you kind of try to do everything in there. I've talked to somebody who wanted to do like a normal office scene in front of like a gigantic LED screen because it was there. Then it's kind of so you have to ask why?
Yeah.
why would you do it? I mean, we're in Berlin. Come on, there's like hundreds of offices. It doesn't need to be
vacant offices, probably too.
Yeah. I ask, you know, it doesn't need to be Times Square or whatever in the background, like which you can't get. No, it was was literally a wall of the building. So it's
it's not an all or nothing.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So it's the teaching part that still needs to be done.
Yeah.
And maybe we can go into the production process just very briefly. Mm. How would you say virtual production has affected the collaboration among the different departments on set?
Mm. I'll let you talk about production, and then I'll tell you how that feeds into the education.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, so it changed quite a bit, and then it didn't. So
it's no, true.
It is true, yeah.
Okay.
There's the like established departments you have everywhere, and the virtual production part of things kind of, if you do it well, it integrates actually very, very seamless into the production. But the problem is mostly we've been brought on too late. So meaning there's already been tons and tons of decisions, so the shoot has been kind of difficult to figure out the way where it actually works. In an ideal world, kind of, we take just a part of the post-production and put it in pre-production. That doesn't mean like the post-supervisor gets less work. No, he just needs to come in earlier and basically accompany this entire shoot from beforehand. The same for the VFX supervisor. He just needs to be aware that it basically happens earlier in that sense. And it doesn't, you know, there's been also discussions with the art department and so on, like, you're gonna steal our jobs. It's gonna, yeah, you know, everything is digital. But no, it was so fun, for example, to talk to Udo from 1899, because he has like this completely different view. He basically told us, hey, it is a virtual art department, so it basically belongs under my hood, because I know how I want to do the physical part of things, but we can extend this entire thing into the digital world. So it's just an extension of proper departments, and that's kind of, I think, the thing. The difficult part is you need to have, for the virtual production work, people who know a lot of, for all the departments in that sense, right? Because you bring in game artists, you bring on color scientists, you bring on people who come from VFX who don't know a lot about games, and all of different people, and just getting this as a baseline. I mean, you know more about this than anyone, but...
You know, it's true, and I think just this disruption from the sort of waterfall approach that we do film is now sort of this much more iterative approach. Mm-hmm. So with VFX coming to the front, again, they have established pipelines, games has established pipelines, live events have established pipelines, but yet all of those transferable skills are utilized in a virtual production. Mm-hmm. So how do you get, you know, talent in a room who have different vocabulary, different pipelines, and now saying this is the structure in which you need to work. These are the, you know, the ways in which we're going to do it. And so de-risking the production by the VFX coming to the front so that you don't know how, you may blow your VFX budget at the end because you don't know how many shots you've got to have. All of the heads of department are all collaborating in previs now, so which is quite different than just handing off, you know, the project to do their particular specialism. And the education aspect of that approach gives them opportunities to de-risk, to build confidence, and to also see how many just creative capabilities they have with this new technology that they weren't, you know, previously aware of. Yeah. And understanding also that particularly with Unreal, a lot of, you know, creatives, DOPs, directors, like, oh, I don't want to learn Unreal. I don't want to learn it because it's too hard.
Yeah.
But when they understand how it's a specific tools that can be used for use case, like directors can previs and stage their scenes. You know, DOPs can light previs. You know, do their virtual lighting.
Yeah.
Art departments understanding the difference between the virtual assets and the real assets and how they merge. You know, it becomes a game changer. And you were saying all of the benefits with cost and so forth, but there's also sustainability. So maybe you're building less sets now and you have less wastage. Obviously the travel, having to move units around, being able to shoot a sunset for 12 hours in one location and not having to go on night shoot. So there's lots of benefits. And while the technology is still very high and might still put off a lot of stakeholders or people to buy it, and to invest in it because they don't quite understand the value of it.
Yeah.
If you are looking at a commercial, for example, it would be 2 weeks on location, and now you can go 2 days in an LED volume and do your shoot, and you have virtual assets that you can repurpose for future campaigns, you've done an investment that is going to pay off in the long run. And there's quite a few people in the industry who are doing this way, who are having 75, and I'll mention this in my keynote, but they're having like 75% lower carbon emission per shoot day.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's incredible to look at that. So those kinds of education in the workflow, education in the details around what the specific things you can do with the technology in your specialism, as well as all the other benefits, embedding those. The other thing I have to add in the education is the access and EDI for, you know, diversity, for, you know, equal access. You know, those things can start to come around and be embedded in education so that it becomes part of that production remit. And that's quite exciting.
Mm-hmm. So, sold.
Yeah.
Good.
What about the clients? Do you feel like they truly understand the benefits, or are you still in the evangelizing state, yeah. mode, whatever. How would you describe the industry right now?
Yeah, it's still very much
evangelizing.
No, it's kind of an example. I've had like two production companies in Switzerland which I've partnered with to kind of bring this technology in, because now you can set up pop-up volumes, like the temporary stuff, and like you don't always need the gigantic big volumes. I mean, for a lot of shoots you don't need them. So, but it's funny when you come to like ad agencies who finally decide how to produce this entire shot. And it was just funny because it was like a repeated process no matter where we went. It was like, okay, come on, yeah, guys, we've done VR in the 2000s. Like,
exactly.
What exactly do you want to tell me?
Exactly.
Yeah? And you start pitching like the entire idea and the concepts and then so on. And it's so funny because then basically you think it's because we're kind of, well, I feel sometimes like in a bubble. So I think most people should have heard of it,
yeah, right.
But they don't. Mm-hmm. I was like this one producer who wanted to talk, who did a train shoot. Basically, he hired some big name talent for the Switzerland commercials. And they needed to do shots on the trains. Then the first thing was kind of live in the train station. The second part was actually in the mountainside. And then the rest they did in front of blue screen. And he said it was the most horrible shoot he've ever done because it was super difficult to schedule. The things didn't work out as they should have done. The blue screen, I don't know why they did it, but they lit the blue screen with different light. So keying was obviously like a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And he just pulled me aside later on. He's like, I wish I would have known it like 2 months earlier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is very much in the beginning because stuff that is quite natural for somebody like who's heard all about that kind of use case, like buses, trains, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Still not there.
Yeah, we have to educate every client that we've got from the get-go. And again, it's like you said, there's a lot of this legacy software, hardware workflows, green screen, blue screen.
Yeah.
And also if you're looking at the cost factor versus like, well, I could just go do virtual production on green screen. Yes, you can. But then you have these other things that you have to look at with the lighting and the green spill and the keying and all of that, and still have the VFX kind of workflows at the end. So there is a lot of education that goes into, and also there's not a whole lot of people that are doing it and doing it well.
That's the point.
So, you may come across a lot of videos or things that are online. Whereas I said 3 years ago, there was nothing. Now there's lots of things on there, but then how do you peel through the layers and find the people who are actually doing it and know what they're doing? Because as we have said with creatives, if they come onto a space and have a really bad experience, that's it.
Yeah.
And virtual production doesn't work, and we're not going to do it. So it is this, approach of making sure that education component comes with the part of the creative production as well, to make sure that those skills are embedded and that it has a longevity beyond just the flash and the hype of new cool technology.
So for young filmmakers interested in entering the field, what kind of skill set should they come with?
Well, we usually say, if you're coming from, and what's really great is most universities have siloed departments.
Yeah.
The games is one, film's another, media is another, animation design. And what they're going to have to do, and this is something that I speak to them quite often, is you're going to have to find ways to start collaborating and coming together. Not necessarily changing your huge infrastructure, because it takes very long to do this. But it's also training the staff. The staff have never been on a virtual production before. So it's so that they need to understand the full capabilities of it so that they can educate and train their students. Mm-hmm. But for the students who are wanting to go into the film industry or live events or whatever, using this broadcast, because they're all using similar tools now.
Right.
And they're going to have to learn a little bit of Unreal, learn a little bit of real-time games engine, learn the workflows that are going to change that are quite different from traditional methodologies of making film. And the great thing is that there's so many opportunities to get in on the ground floor now, because stages are hungry for new talent, as virtual production ramps up. And it's really a great time to be in this industry because there is lots of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really great about learning these technologies as well is their transferable skills. Because manufacturing is using it, engineering, space, technology, they're all using these. So it's not going to be one skill for one industry. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite liberating and really kind of levels up the opportunities that young people have today wanting to go into this kind of industry.
It sounds like it's less about a specific skill that they have to learn, like you just mentioned, but more about being open to collaborating, open to talking to other departments.
Yeah, and... I think certainly having, it's really interesting, if you want to go into virtual production filmmaking, you still need those traditional film skills.
Yes.
You need to understand that all of the roles, the different departments, how they work together. But with the advent of virtual production, you now have this OSVP, or this on-set virtual production team. There's this great mandala. I don't know if you've seen it, but Story Futures have put out this mandala that shows all of the skills that are required and the crew that are required. All the blue, which are just tiny little blue marks, are our traditional film. Right. And then all the yellow all the way around are all the technicians that are now working on this. So it is this merging of traditional and new tech to come in and make something completely new.
Are you going to show that?
I am.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So we're going to be able to look at
it. Yeah, you will. And it's not necessarily my favorite visual, but I think what it does is it demonstrates to you the highly technical nature of virtual production and how it's almost moving into like STEM subjects because of the engineering, because of the technical capabilities. Mm-hmm. Luckily, with Unreal and a lot of other programs, you don't have to know maths and coding to be able to do it.
Which is good and bad.
Yeah.
No, it's true though. It was good, just you know, as the example, because there were huge strikes this year, right? Mm. So beginning of the year, two like of my long term projects got cancelled. So luckily, I don't have a big issue of moving into different stuff, because all of a sudden somebody hit me and was kind of asking, "Hey, we're doing in VR, we want to visualize a power plant in VR, and it's like millions of pieces. So could you do it?" I mean, yeah, sure, I'll give it a go. I mean, I'm not kind of Unreal. I've done VR before, so why not? And all of a sudden you can do it, and because you know network, you can do a multiplayer in the back end. You can pull data from web, and all of a sudden it was funny for me to see, like, to prove to yourself. It's like, oh wow. There's a skill set there which is not necessarily just, you know, film focus, not game focus. It's kind of a wonderful mix in between. And if you kind of know the basics, you can much easily kind of get into those new areas.
They're already waiting for us outside. So maybe just one last question. Maybe you can share one last advice to the young filmmakers who are out there interested, not sure whether they should go into virtual production, whether they should focus on virtual production. Mm-hmm. What would you say to them? Should they do it?
Yes. Well, yes. I will give you an anecdote from, because we do training with so many different age groups, from the very young to the old and older and very distinguished, you know, technicians and, you know. And it's they're so enthusiastic when they hear what it actually is and understand all of its capabilities. And I quite often have both the young and the older, you know, expert, is this for me? Like, is this something that I can learn? The younger people, obviously, because they're in games, they're digital natives, they understand how this kind of stuff works, but it moves at such pace to where they feel like, if I don't jump in, I'm going to be left behind. Mm-hmm. And the older legacy players who've been in for a very long time, you know, like I'm like an old dog. Can I learn new tricks kind of thing? And the truth is yes. I mean, I really think that these technologies have democratized people's access and approach to be able to do this kind of creative storytelling. Mm-hmm. You don't, and there's still lots of barriers, as we've talked about. Getting access to stages is very, very difficult to do. Yeah. But having access to Unreal, which is currently free, we'll see how that goes in the future. But I think for education, it will stay free.
Yeah. Hopefully.
And there are so many things in the pre-viz world that you can build your own film inside this, you know, key technology. By yourself sometimes and mocap and doing animation. You can do it with your iPhone now. And, you know, it's just, it's phenomenal how it's moving at speed. So I definitely think, yes, this is the direction of travel. And it's a great time to get in now on the ground floor when it's still very much early adoption phase.
Yeah.
Nothing to add to that. That's perfect. Yeah.
Perfect. So that's good news for our students.
There we go.
Nice. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
I can't wait for your panel.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Well done.
All right. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Yay. Cool. We steamed up the windows.
Oh, yeah, definitely did.